Yo, Dougie on the mic. He doing it right. We're gonna have a podcast if it takes all night. Dougie on the mic. Is this thing on?
All right, let's get this show on the road.
Okay. Welcome to the Coffee and Carving Show, brought to you by Doug Linker and Alec Lacasse. Hey, everybody, I'm Alec Lacasse, and this is my friend, Doug. Doug and I met one summer afternoon.
Oh, boy.
Hey, this week's show is sponsored by our new... Wow, how unprofessional.
Oh, says the guy who made his wait 10 minutes to get his printed jokes ready.
I'll tell you about the printer and why we had to reboot it. But Ben, yeah. Kay and Deb and Bob bought us coffees this week. Thanks, guys. And we also have a new feature that was used by Marathon Inc. Gave us a super thanks on our video last week. So big thanks to all those. And that's it.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Cheers.
I've got...
You got a new mug.
Your old dark roast in my new favorite mug. I bought that at a secondhand store. I love clay and wood. I like earthy cups.
I do too. That's why I like this. I like that one you have is matte though. Mm-hmm. I don't like how mm-hmm. I don't like the shiny.
Yeah, it has a glazed top and a matte bottom. I like it. I like pottery. I always wanted to get into pottery, but never wanted to commit. I want my wife to do it. Is there something more important you want to talk to somebody else? Or?
Well, yeah, that's a given. But you know, it's funny when Doug and I first started this podcast. Actually, Doug, you're here right now, so I can speak to you. When you and I started this podcast, people were like, "Why don't you guys be nice to each other?" Like,
yeah,
there's no reason to have beef. And I think that people really thought that we were actually beefing, you know, hardcore, like didn't, you know, fighting or something. We're just messing. Yeah. Half the time we're just messing with each other.
So I don't tease my enemies.
Right.
You didn't tell me what you're drinking though.
Just a pretty standard run of the mill decaf from Trader Joe's. Not good.
Not good.
Very bad.
Very bad. Well, then let me tell you a story.
Let's hear it.
A Mexican magician tells the audience he's going to disappear on the count of three. He says, uno, dos, poof. He disappeared without a trace.
Wow. That's a great one. That's a good one.
Really?
I do like it. I accidentally hit the mute on my phone.
I said, well, I thought you lost your mic for a minute.
Yeah, sorry, guys.
And your excitement for that joke. Well, a man walks into a zoo, and the only animal in the entire zoo is a dog. It was the shih tzu.
Oh, my gosh.
Come on. That's good. That's quality. That's quality.
That's high. That's what they tune in for. That high quality, good content.
Yep. So I want to tell you a story about my printer. I had to print out that joke. And we had a transformer just explode last night on the road next to us. It was so loud. It almost felt like it shook our house.
Really?
And then just a fireball and sparks flying, but the boom was amazing and all the hydro electricity flashed but didn't go out. But this thing was just burning. Fire trucks came and big excitement.
Huh.
So that's why we had to restart everything. So that's why I was late.
Well, that's okay. And sorry about your hydro. I think I know what that means now, thankfully. Yeah, Canadians, eh?
Hey, Hey.
Pretty well,
You know, I just can't go on. I gotta say, get something off my chest. And yeah. Two hunters wrote in the woods.
Are you serious?
I'm sorry. I have to. Two hunters are out in the woods when one of them collapses. He doesn't seem to be breathing and his eyes are glazed. And the other guy whips out his phone and calls the emergency services and he gasps, "My friend is dead. What can I do?" The operator says, "Calm down. I can help. First, let's make sure he's dead." There's a silence. Then a gunshot is heard. Back on the phone, the guy says, "Okay, now what?"
That's horrible. Oh my gosh. These jokes are getting crazier.
All right, that's all I got to say.
So there was a Greek boy walked into a church and yeah, this is one that my mom taught me. And he went in there, he was walking around milling about, and he hadn't had his hair cut in a few months, so he had a big poofy hair. And you know, actually,
much like yourself. Yeah, little mop head.
Yeah, and he was walking around. Just for the spirit of this joke, I'll leave this like this. And he was walking around, and it was sort of before church started, and the janitor was still kind of finishing up in the bathrooms. And the janitor, he was kind of walking past him in the kind of the dark hallway on his way to catechism, and the janitor grabbed the young boy and started shaking him, picked him upside down and knocked his head on the ground and later the mother asked the janitor why he was doing that, and the janitor said, "I thought he was a mop."
Wow.
Yeah, that's a real joke that's been passed down from generation to generation in our family. So you have
just lost all right and privilege to comment on my quality of jokes.
You should really be honored that I even shared that with non-family.
If that's funny to you,
that's probably one of the better jokes I know.
we should address the elephant in the room for those on video.
Yep.
While they're typing, what happened to your hair? What happened to your beard? What we're saying. Because the last video I got, and all the questions were, "Is that Doug? Is that Doug?" Yeah, it's me. Yeah. It's summertime Doug.
Right.
I had a little momentary lapse of reason last week and went crazy with the clippers.
No, so. I think that the shaved head balances out, because you guys didn't get to see it. He had just no beard and then a full head of hair. And now it's sort of, it looks better this way, I think. More balance.
Let me tell you, no balance. Balance. The reason is, and now you can't relate to this, I'm sure. Because okay. I last week I made my Jeep naked, took the top off, took the doors off, took everything off, and was driving around, and it was insanity. The wind. My hair was blowing up in the sky, and I'm half bald already. I look like a hillbilly, and I just had enough. So that's why.
There you go. You heard it here. No, I mean,
there it is.
I don't know. I'm afraid. You're lucky. You have a nice, you know, it seems like you have a good head shape. I'm not sure what's going on under there. I've never really, since I was 7 or 8 years old, I've not had to see. And I'm a little worried about the shapes up there. But okay. it'll be okay.
Right, let's keep a hat on otherwise. But.
Yeah, that's the plan.
So what have you been up to this week?
Tell
me all about your week.
Oh,
tell us all about your week.
Tell me everything, Doug.
Yes.
Why don't you start first?
Well, I just gave you my hair story.
Yeah.
But again, same as weeks past, is dealing with and helping out the parents. Mm. And hey, we're talking about coffee. Mm. I figured something out today. So in the mornings, I've been skipping a coffee because every morning now, while my mother's in the hospital, I bring my dad a coffee to make sure he's up and at him and good to go. But he only likes a small coffee, so I always just buy two small coffees. And then I noticed this week, every well, no, and then I skip my coffee break in the morning to make up for time and whatever. But
okay,
every morning at 11 o'clock, splitting headache.
Really?
Splitting headaches. Yeah, right through till like 1 o'clock. I'm like, why do I didn't wake up with a headache? Why do I have this headache? And I thought maybe I'm not drinking enough water. So I drink a gallon of water, still headache. It's coffee. It's really? Caffeine. This afternoon I made another coffee at like 1 o'clock, drank it, headache gone.
Ah.
So I have a caffeine problem.
yeah.
That's the story. But yeah.
How many cups of coffee do you have in a normal day before this new phase of life?
Oh, well, I would probably have three before my first job, and then I'd have another one. Okay. And then, of course, always 10 o'clock coffee break.
Right.
And then lunch is optional. And then 3 o'clock, I drink a coffee.
Okay. So five or six.
Yeah, enough. Yep.
Wow.
But I was down to like only like two small ones. And that's, okay. That's why I'm sure of it, because I made a coffee and the headache went away. So
right. Yeah, no, that's a thing, I think. Caffeine deficiency. So
yeah, I didn't realize that. But anyway, so parents aside, I did get a chance to
More like caffeine dependency, I think. Caffeine deficiency implies that everyone has to have a certain amount of it.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a deficiency.
yeah.
So I didn't get to do anything till like Friday night. But Friday night, as we talked about last week, how I was envious and talked about the carving stations,
mm-hmm.
I whipped up a carving station on my porch, like I said I was going to.
That's cool.
And it was fantastic. So Saturday morning, first thing, I got up and did a little carving. This guy here did a little carving. And
That's great. I love his eye. Man, I love the eyes and the beard combo when you get that like bluish. That's cool.
I carved that cool. and made a video to go with it on YouTube. So yeah.
Awesome.
But that was big fun. It was a little lazy. I didn't get too carried away, but I called the video, I think it was Old, Bald, and Outside. So it was fun to
that wasn't to about you?
Well, it could be. But it was nice because the birds were chirping in the background and stuff, and it's good. That's a little bit cool. Traffic, but otherwise no, it was good. So I will do that again for sure.
Yeah,
and
that's awesome.
Come up with something else. But I didn't plan the face. I just, again, need reference photos because I just attacked
really solid,
but that's what it came out with. But
that's really like good.
I like to be more, what do you say, more prepared, have a plan and action. Yeah, whatever.
Prepared.
So that was that.
Yeah.
But yeah, and that, and then what else did I do? Oh, Sunday afternoon drive after my nap. We went out to the beach again and looked at the big ships. And
oh, cool.
It was a good time. It was really good. Really nice to go. I'd love driving again. Just drive around, because the beach is like an hour and a half away.
Oh.
That beach in particular, with the ships and the big salt mines and stuff, the big monster ships. One ship was from Portugal coming in this off Lake Huron and loading up with salt, because the salt mine was there. So yeah, it's fun.
That is cool. Yeah, it's funny. Annalise, my fiance, and I were driving, and we looked off to the side, and driving past us was this beautiful, brand new Jeep, same as yours, not a Cherokee, a Wrangler.
Yeah,
and it was the four door. And she was like, "When you see that, do you get a little bit jealous?" And I said, "Yeah, of course." And I immediately thought about you, and I called you and tried to tell you this conversation.
Oh yes.
But you were in your vehicle with the top down, serendipitously.
Yes.
So I couldn't hear you. I was trying to tell you the joke of or what, you know, basically that my fiance just held over my head that I don't have the car, not knowing that you have it. I couldn't hear you because of the wind rushing past your face.
Well, that was
an added kick to the butt.
So Alec and I, we never talk on the
to the
telephone.
Face.
It's always FaceTime. He always has to do FaceTime because it's free.
Right.
But when you FaceTime me, I gave my phone to my wife and said, answer it, because I had the top off. But we were out in the middle of a field and we were in like 3.5 foot grasses and stuff, and then sticks were crunching, and I was going wee.
Yeah, it looked awesome. It looked awesome.
Yeah, so we were ripping around and out in the field when you called, so that was perfect timing.
It was fun. It was fun to eat, at least, not fun because I was in my enclosed. What do the motorcycle people call it? A cage. I was in my cage.
In your box.
I was in my cage, my box. But I am envious. I wish I had a. I've never really even been in a convertible, I don't think. So, yeah.
Well, yeah. It's amazing how windy it is. Like the women folk definitely have to tie their hair up and do something because because it's crazy. So
that's windy. What Annalise said is that she can see why people in the 50s and 60s in those movies, all the women had those headscarves when they were in the convertibles. Those
scarves.
Yeah, for sure. It's funny. Yeah.
But that's pretty much my week. I don't know of anything more talk about that. But like I said, and it's an ongoing thing with my parents, and that's really is a priority of getting things figured out with them. And man, lots of decisions to be made and stuff. Mm-hmm. So no fun at all, but it's coming for all of us. So
yeah,
gotta be ready.
Right. Yeah, it's true, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
That's very true. Yeah. So what's the moral of that story? Prepare yourself mentally.
Yeah. Or die young.
Yeah. In a fiery crash. There's some merit to that.
Live hard and die young. What's the saying?
I don't know. I think it's probably on somebody's toilet somewhere on a plaque.
Some biker's patch on his back. Yeah.
Live hard and die young, man.
we're totally ruining that. It's probably something more meaningful, but
sure. Yeah.
Killing it. But
it's probably a beautiful, like one excerpt from a beautiful Theodore Roosevelt quote. He has a lot of great ones like that. Except for not at all like that.
All right, what have you been up to?
Mine's not a lot more exciting, really. Just the wedding planning, which has been, so far, fingers crossed, pretty good. It's been going pretty smooth. And so I'm a little bit weary because, everyone tells you, I've run into people actually wedding planning at the coffee shop who I know, and they're like, we've cried 3 or 4 times each. And I'm like, gosh, why are they crying? It's supposed to be a good time, like a party, right? What is a party that you're crying to get ready for? But no, it's been good. So it hasn't been too negative. It's been good. I think Annalise, her mom and dad, Sandy and Cal, have been really great to work with. And my parents have been really great as well. And Annalise has done a lot of the hard stuff. I'm just planning honeymoon stuff. And an update on that. Tell me what you think of this. I met my neighbors a couple of days ago for like the second or third time. Really nice people. And they said, of course, they're getting married in a month. And what they're doing is they're doing their honeymoon in Michigan, in town, or maybe up north, immediately after the wedding. And then they're postponing a larger trip to Hawaii for the winter, so they can kind of enjoy the warmth of Hawaii instead of the snowy winter of Michigan.
Hmm.
And I thought, genius, we'll do our trip to Italy in the late, or maybe like early spring, late winter, and we'll do something shorter in the country. Like a trip to Colorado or something in the meantime, a little bit less expensive, a little bit involved time-wise. So it's kind of a fun idea, right?
It is a fun idea. I think the only caveat I would say would be buy the tickets to Italy.
Yeah, exactly.
Or something before something will come else. Up. Yeah. Something will come up and you'll take it. Well, we'll do it. Okay, we'll do it in the spring. And then after the first year, your wife will never forget it. Ever.
Oh yeah, of course not.
You told me we were going to Italy, right?
Yeah.
So you better buy the tickets.
Oh yeah. No, that's a good point. That's good advice. And that's no, it's true. But aside from that, that's been going pretty well. And thinking of new things to add to the registry, like planter boxes, and I mean, just all kinds of weird stuff. There's been built. I've been kind of finishing up with Annalise, the benches that I mentioned before, it's called, there's a name for it. It's basically a dining nook of some kind. And we actually got into it, had fun. I overbuilt it. It's built from 2x4s, tons of 2x4s in that thing, and clad in 3/8 inch T111, which is like a wooden siding, plywood siding. For those of you listening, I know you know that, but and then I just trimmed it out and just like puke board, painted puke board and pine. And I did the edge banding that you talked about. I just ripped a 2x4 into little things and glued it on and nailed it to drop. So hold it down, air nailed it. And then, yeah, that's basically it. It looks pretty good, actually. Annalise got excited. And this is what surprised me. This is what surprised me about building this bench. We thought the main expense would be, you'd think at least wood, right? Number one. And what else? Number two, I don't know, fabric or paint.
Fabric.
Paint or something. The foam. The fabric itself was $40 or $50, $40 to do the entire thing. But the foam was $200.
What?
Yes. Incredibly. What kind
of foam did you get?
It was just your standard foam. They had a product that was a little bit cheaper called New Foam that's supposed to take moisture better, like it wicks moisture. It's not quite as comfortable. So we thought about getting that, but that was $150. So what the conclusion I came to was that we'll buy the New Foam online. Annalise had found it online from Walmart for like, I think it was still going to be like over $100. Crazy. But she said, let's wait on that. On our way home from our foam trip, we saw a garage sale sign. She said, we should pull in. I love garage sales. Maybe we'll find something. Maybe we'll find some cushions. So pulls in, immediately gets out of the car and says, do you see that? I'm like, what? She said, the cushions. Do you see the cushions? I said, no, I don't see any cushions. Sure enough, a full fold out outdoor mat that you can, you know, like fold into a little cube, gets it for $5, takes it home, cuts it apart. It's the exact brand of foam that we were looking at. And it was enough to do almost the entire bench with the exception of one little area. So it saved us, $150.
Since you started talking, that's exactly what I was thinking the whole time. It was like, go to a secondhand store and get some ugly print piece of furniture. And just cut it open.
Yep. So for those who are watching, you can on YouTube, you can see this is what it looks like now. It's a little bit of painting to do. But Annalise picked out this really cute like fabric. It almost looks like a topographical map. It's got blue and gray lines in it and little dots. And it's supposed to be patterned off of a topographical map. It's kind of cute. And the other thing was we thought a pattern would be nice to hide some stains. So we did that. So that was fun. I worked on the sauna, actually, a little bit. I did some repairs on the old hot box. The eave is still exposed, and I'm gonna build in some vents. So I started cutting out the wood, the T111 to create the vents and the little cleats or what have you, so I can screw
that. You're talking about soffit vents.
Soffits. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Exactly.
And you have a roof vent too, then?
Yeah. Yeah. There'll be two. Yeah.
That's what you need, the cross ventilation.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I learned that from an old builder guy who's been really helpful. But anyway, so that, not a lot of carving, a lot of carving adjacent stuff, like giving feedback to students on the school. I had probably three or four people post to the school. And the trick is, for a while I was giving people feedback when they weren't asking for it, just assuming that they saw the original message on the Facebook forum that I created for the school, which was, if you want feedback, post here and I'll give it to you. A lot of people have logged on or started the school a lot later and therefore have not seen that and just think that this is a place to share the work. So I realized that, and I kind of came back a little bit down from giving some people so much critical feedback. Instead, now I'm just going through and saying, great job, I like the way you did this, or nice, nice composition or whatever. So
that's a very good point, because I get a lot of people send me pictures of what they've carved from my tutorials and stuff. And I'm always like, I see something, and I'm like, that looks good.
Yep.
But I don't want to give, because I know how I would feel if I got, advice or,
yep,
like criticism for something that I was proud of. Right. I didn't ask for your advice. Just say it's nice. But no, a lot of people do good work. But it's hard to accept criticism when you're not asking for it. When you're proud of something and you want to show it off. But
right.
In your case, like you said, that's the idea, to show the picture for the criticism. And a lot of guys ask for feedback too. But
right.
Other people, exactly. you never hear from, give them advice and never hear from them again because they're mad at you.
Yeah, they log off the school. That guy was a jerk. That's why I canceled. And he kept telling me what's wrong with all the carvings I was trying to share with the group.
Every time I show him a picture, he's got to pick something out.
This guy.
Well, the whole premise of the site was for criticism and help, and every time I show him a picture, he nitpicks some little thing to fix.
So I'm trying to just enjoy people's work where it's at, and it's not hard to do that because everyone's on there is doing such a good job. It's just I feel like I'm cheating them if I don't give them feedback. So but I get, so really that kind of speaks to this whole thing of like, when is unsolicited feedback good? Because every once in a while you get someone giving you advice that you didn't ask for that you like. Most of the time it's like, gosh, I wish this guy wouldn't be telling me about how I should do this differently, like leave, buzz off. But occasionally you get a guy who comes along and says, hey, this is a better way, and they do it in such a way where you're like, man, thanks a lot, brother. What is that? I don't know.
I'm no good at that. I'm terrible. I'm the worst.
Right. Yeah, I don't either.
I don't like being evaluated by anybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's just because I'm bullheaded. So.
Well, I get it. And it's like, but you know, here's what I think the differentiating factor is for me is like, if somebody knows what, if actually has done the thing and knows what they're talking about, then I'll take the critical feedback.
Oh, I would have no issue whatsoever in asking you, what do you see wrong with this or whatever? If I'm asking you.
Yeah, right.
I would hate for someone just to come along and say, that looks good, but the forehead's awful big.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
I always take that negatively immediately.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, oh, can you do better? Because most of the time that kind of criticism normally comes from someone who doesn't do what you do.
And at least, yeah, but even that comment, like, I'll take that. If someone says the forehead's too big, I'll take that. But what I don't like is when, like, I had a buddy come over once in the studio and said, well, you're definitely no fill in the blank. You know, you're nowhere near the level of so-and-so. And they weren't kidding. They were saying, like, you've got a long ways to go. And I was like, okay, well, that's not specific, right? It's just discouraging.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of like, man, if you could have given me some feedback, this could have been a helpful moment. But instead, you just chose to say, you're not as good as this other guy who I know through you.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, the forehead's too big. I go back and say, well, you're too big, you fat.
Your forehead's too big, but I don't say nothing.
Yeah. Look in the mirror. No, anyway.
I don't say nothing about your nose.
Yeah.
So other than that, slowly plugging away, I've gotten like little blips of time in between these house projects with Annalise to work on Sitting Bull. You can kind of peep his face here. You know, these feathers, though, oh, horrible nightmare doing every little tine. So that's going to be hopefully be done soon.
You've got you got a whole collection. You got three of them there. Scoot your chair sideways for a minute.
Yeah, I just
wow. Sorry, audio, but Alec is showing he's got three big Native American busts on the go right behind them there, and they're big.
Yeah, they're pretty big, and I don't have enough room in this 12 by 16 shop for them. So mostly I'm doing the big stuff outside and then bringing them in to keep them from getting wet. But oh, I've got four more at my parents' house that I need to bring here and start finishing up. And who knows what's going to happen. But I got a really cool – I can actually share about it now because it's happening. But that piece that I got commissioned to do – I'm sorry, that I came up with – with the woman's hair and the and Stevie the cat trying to attack this bird, all in her hair. I explained this project to a woman from Farmington Hills, Michigan, a nearby town, who's putting on an event, and she said that she would like for me to do that carving as a part of a collaborative thing where people coming by can help to put finish on it or paint or in some way contribute mm-hmm. to the piece. And so I'm thinking of doing like a dummy piece that people can do that to. That's maybe not quite as detailed, not quite as intricate, that they can, you know, work on themselves and then have like the nicer version that I'll end up selling later. I'll probably donate. Don't tell anyone, guys, from Farmington, but I'll probably donate that piece to them.
Yeah.
The interactive piece, and they might put it up somewhere, they said. So anyway, but yeah, other than that, it's been kind of fun to kind of reframe the way that I think about doing art shows. Cause I do art shows for a living. For those of you that don't know, I should say art shows for a few years, maybe 10 or 12 years, where every summer you travel around to these juried fine art fairs that you pay a lot of money to be in, you know, $500, $600, $700, sometimes $1,000 to be in a show. And I've been doing this one for a lot of years. I won't name them because I don't want to throw them under the bus, but they've been so generous. They give me a free corner. There's an extra fee to get at a corner because there's more traffic. They've always mm-hmm. given that to me, and they've always done media promotion and given me spots to do TV stuff to promote their event. And it's helped me out in that show. And so recently they redid everything. They have a new person running it, and they called me and said, hey, by the way, most important part of this, they've given me the same awesome spot every year, the right at the entrance of the show, you know, 250,000 people plus walking through the show.
Oh, wow.
It's one of the biggest in Michigan. They see me when they walk in, main entrance. And so the very generous, they said, hey, called me and we can't give you this spot anymore. And we're going to have to charge you $250 extra on top of your booth fee to give you a different corner. And then if you win an award this year, we might be able to jury you in to put you in a lottery to win that spot back. And I just said, nope, no, thank you. You know, I appreciate your time. I'm done. And because I kind of already decided I wasn't going to do any shows with exception of that one, right? Mm-hmm. Until this event happened with Farmington. They called me. They said, we're going to give you the booth for free. We're going to pay you to demo. I had to kind of fight for the pay to demo thing. I told them, I explained, you know, if you want me to do the interactive element, then there has to be some pay. And I just kind of stood up for myself a little bit. And I started thinking about this with this bigger event, this 250,000 person event. You know what? I should get paid to sit outside all day and demo for people. I'm putting on a show. The event they make a lot of money. And a lot of times mm-hmm. what people are coming to see is not just people sit in their booths quietly smoking cigarettes. It's people making stuff. And most people who are selling at fine art shows are not making stuff. No. And it's a performance. I've done it for many years. I'm interactive. I'm fun. I talk with the people. I explain them what I'm doing. When I'm, you know, a goofy, you know, whatever, I'm doing this stuff to try and show them and their kids what's possible, right? And it's good stuff. So I'm starting to think now that's how I should view the art show circuit. Is if I do a show, I should be paid to do the show because I'm sitting out there all day, 24, you know, basically, 12, you know, 14 hours a day hand carving stuff to sell. And so I proposed that to them. I said, you know what? If I'm going to do this show, you can't take away my corner. I mean, you're going to have to give me another corner for free. And then I have to get paid for some demo. And they were like, well, we'll get back to you. We'll come up with a demo. We'll get back to you. So they said, they called me a week later and they said, you know, we created a whole new thing. It's called the artist demonstration portion of the art show. And we're going to allow you to do two demonstrations and we'll pay you. And does this sound fair? Like, we don't know what this is like. And I was like, that's great. That's fine. Yep. So it got me thinking about venues. And you mentioned that you're thinking about different avenues of selling and the genre of selling. And so I thought maybe, you know, kind of you talk about going to a Christmas craft show recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it was funny because it was a big Christmas, what they call them? Christmas bazaar, whatever they call them.
Yeah. Craft
show.
Yeah.
Anyways, a big one. We had to pay admission. And the three of us, it was expensive to get in. I was like, this better be good. And we walked around and we were out in 8 minutes. There wasn't a handcrafted thing in there, but the money was there. Like, it was a big deal. And the things were all like little mini stores. Like, the handcraft was gone other than a few blankets or whatnot, or, you know, bee products or honey products, you know, stuff like that. But it wasn't, it was like Christmas bazaar. Like, we would have cleaned up there. Like, it would have been the handcraft wasn't there. I thought that'd be a good way to unload. The problem with selling is online. It's not a problem, and I definitely will do it at some point, but it's the shipping. It's always the shipping. Like, add another $50 on the ship of bark carving to Texas.
Yeah,
like, that adds up quick. And if you unload a dozen or more carvings at once, then
just saying, over 100 to ship to Australia or
But I like what you just said with the art show too, the demonstration, because you're killing a couple birds. You're taking the mystery out of your craft.
Yep.
If you're just sitting in front of a bunch of your carvings, like, what does that mean? Nobody knows how you did it. It'd be kind of cool to see that in action, and it adds to the story of the carving too.
Yeah.
And if they buy it and they say, we met this guy and he was carved by hand and all that stuff, you know?
I've wrinkled myself from years of sitting out in the sun doing that. Summers, just every weekend hitting another art show every single summer for years, and just wearing myself out. And it took me this many years to realize that this is a service that I'm going to start offering to art shows. So if you want me to demo, you got to at least cover my booth.
That's a great idea. But, but on the same hand, you're also you're making use of your time. Another drawback of a show is sitting there doing nothing and knowing that you could be doing something at home.
Yeah.
That would drive me insane. I couldn't sit there without doing it. So it would be good to carve while you sit there.
And what's worse is a lot of times you do a show, not this show I'm talking or either of these shows, but some of these smaller shows when you're starting out, they promise, tens of thousands of people, and maybe they get a handful of people walking through there in a day.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing worse. You set up, it took you a day to set up everything. You've been working for 2, 3, 4, 5, sometimes months in advance to make the art for it. And then there's like 2 or 3 people that walk by per hour. And then when they do come by, they just go, "Oh, these are neat." And they walk out. It's like, just take me now. Take me now, Lord.
But I don't mind the idea of a Etsy shop either. But I was told by someone too, like, Etsy gets a cut of your work.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And but they also draw the audience. Same thing. Show entrance is their fee. But Shopify is another one too. Mm-hmm. If you have a following,
right.
I may have enough following to sell.
Totally. Absolutely.
To sell to.
100%.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I was going to say, you of all people in the carving world, of course you have the, Shopify is a really cool way of doing that too. And so the way that a lot of people do that is they'll do a drop, like a product drop. And I think that's really neat. I've never done that. And maybe we'll do that as an experiment one day. It just kind of get all your inventory and then do kind of like an online show. Just you dump 20 pieces or 15 pieces one day. Make it available to people. First come, first serve.
No, I like the idea. But I also like the idea of Etsy being all handmade things, and they do draw in probably millions of people. Right?
Yeah, right.
But I did a quick search on Etsy, and there's room for everybody.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I guess it's in conclusion, reframe your, you know, you got, so sometimes you're given a box, you know, okay, when you go to fine art shows, you pay to get in and then you do your thing. But I found that it's given me a lot of power to say to myself, I don't do art shows anymore, you know, like, and so that gives me a little leverage when I've talked to these two art shows is just say, hey, I don't need to do art shows anymore. I don't want to do art shows. I'd rather travel and teach to 5 or 10 people who are happy to see me than sit out and wait for 5 or 10 people who are happy to see me out of 10,000.
Yeah.
So yeah. Anyway, I digress, but.
Are you a people watcher?
Oh, I'm the worst people watcher. I'm watching a people right now.
Okay.
Are you?
Oh, I like seeing a variety of people.
Yeah. Just the different outfits.
When I want to. And when I don't want to, I just want to escape everybody.
Yeah.
But it's always fun to see a crowd and see the diversity of all the people and stuff. It's interesting.
Yeah, one of my favorite things to do. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just gonna say now when you look at people, you never look at them. Like you're picking apart their face and seeing how their faces put together.
Yep.
You start going, oh, I never thought of that. Look, I'll carve that. You know,
that's the most fun part is going up. You know, you see when you go to a show and you know, because it's not often you get to see 200,000, 250,000 people walk past you in the span of 3 or 4 days. And you see all kinds of people. I mean, it's great for networking.
Everybody under the sun.
And what's fun too is to see how people dress, to see how what they choose to wear. Some guys and girls out there just have the most eclectic, you know, it's like their art form is what they put on their bodies. That's kind of fun to see too.
Mr. Dress Up, all fancy pants, and then you got these steampunk guys.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Punk rocker guys. And,
yep.
And all the different. The tattoos that people are getting these days. Yep. It's fun.
It really is. Yeah. No, it can be. You're making me excited about it again, actually. So I'm doing a couple just enough to wet the palate. So
there you go.
Anyway, but, is it that time?
No, sure. I'll make it that time.
I didn't mean to cut you off. Finish it.
No, it's okay. No, no. What time would that be, though? We got to figure this out someday.
Wait. Yeah.
We need a button just to push the button.
You got another topic in mind? Or another genre?
No. No. I'm just saying the mailbag intro is so weak.
You didn't like it?
No.
All right, let's turn the top. Here we go.
This is even worse. I think you're gun shy from last week being criticized with your accents.
Oh, Doug gets all these comments. There's negative ones. You delete the ones that are negative about you, and then you call me and you go, ha-ha, I got a negative one on you. You send it to me.
Nobody likes your accent.
You're like an older brother, man. You're just like my older brother. Much delight.
Oh, I love it.
You know,
the fun part is that this is so new to you. Yeah. I've been getting called names for years and years, and I know how it would affect you being new to the game.
Oh yeah,
because like I remember I used to get so upset and so mad, and now I just laugh and delete the person or whatever. But I love just rubbing it in. And
My favorite one was Kenny and I, my brother's spawning YouTuber, European Auto Repair. Check him out. And he does this thing where he does, you know, car repair videos. And he did this really long one and somebody responded, well, you know, you didn't really mention the belt tightness and the radius of the blah, blah, blah. And it's this really beefy response message to his video, critical about all the things he should have done. And he just responds, he shows this to me at the dinner table with, thanks for watching.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I used to, for therapy, I used to just do the nastiest replies. just for therapy, but then delete it.
Yeah.
Delete it because you don't want to start the conversation, but you just want to get your thoughts out there and just lay it out and then just delete it. Then you feel better.
So. 100%. Now, I can't wait to use that. Thanks for watching one on the next nefarious comment. So anyway, yeah. So I haven't done an accent since, you know, at all. No more accents. I'm becoming a different person. So.
Well, that's good news.
It was just Doug. You're the troll.
Yeah.
You know, with four, a new account.
I got 14 different accounts.
Yeah. Let's see. Did we get any good email this week, Doug?
Not many. A very slow week.
Well, then should I start with Tim? We got Tim Whedon. Hey, Doge and Alec. Recently, me and my son went on a blacksmith course, and we were able to make this bushcraft knife out of an old farrier's rasp. My son did most of the metal work, and I carved the handle. I was wondering if you guys have done anything similar. Not much use for carving, but I reckon it would skin a rabbit. Love the show. Also, love Doug's tutorials. So inspirational. Tim.
Thanks, Tim. Blacksmithing is such another rabbit hole. Oh, nice knife.
Yeah, it is a cool knife.
Yeah, I remember back in the day, I was all excited. I really wanted to do it. I got the old brake drum, and I was going to get the hand-cranked fan and weld them all together and make this forge. And then I caught myself, and I said, stop. Just stop. Stop. You can't go down this path. Yeah. There's so many paths.
Yeah.
You know, next thing you know, you're buying a KMG grinder and you're grinding knives. You make three of them and then you go, oh, butterfly. I think I'm going to start weaving something or clay or something. It's so hard to stay focused on one area. So
yeah,
I'm really trying my best to not, but I do appreciate blacksmithing. It's the same idea as, like I said, with that clay coffee mug. I just love handmade things. And the closest I ever got to any blacksmithing, which really wasn't blacksmithing at all, but I took a railroad spike and made a really cool letter opener with a railroad spike.
Cool. That's neat.
Yeah, that was fun.
That's really neat. Yeah, I think it's rite of passage. When I was a little kid, we had a big barn and lived in the country. We live on Dwight Schrute's beet farm. It might as well have. And we had a furnace, and that's how I heated up the shop in the morning. And I made a big fire in there one day and got it really hot with a fan. I put a fan that I eventually melted from doing this too many times too, but got it hot and then stuck a piece of metal in there, like I think a nail. And then I got it smoldering hot and I knocked out a little letter opener for my mom. And then I shoved it in a handle, a walnut handle that I turned on the lathe. And it was pretty cool. My mom pretended to like it a lot. You know, I polished it with my strop and everything. And then, yeah, I went from there. I got a file. I heard about tempering steel and then getting, high quality steel from files to make a knife.
I had a whole armload of good files too. I was gonna hammer out.
Yeah. So that was the next step from there. And yeah, I thought that I was gonna be a knife maker. 100% thought that I was going to be Alcocast knife maker. I was banging on stuff. I went in on an anvil with my dad, and I think I made one other knife out of a file with a walnut handle. And I got some antler from my friend's deer, and I did the little pins, you know, I don't know what they're called. I forget what they're called now. Anyway, the pins through the tang that inserts into the handle.
Yep.
And yeah, I polished it up and it was pretty nice. I'm lying. It was bad. It literally felt. Here's how you know an object is not well made. It falls apart before you even use it. So it just sat in a drawer somewhere. And last time I checked, the pins were falling out. And so
there's different types of pins. And if you just get like a straight brass pin, but they have some beautiful ones that they lock together on their own. They make mosaic pins now. They're just amazing. Mm-hmm. The tubes and everything. But yeah, no, I bought an anvil too. I had all the little add-on parts to it, which was a it was a fortune, and luckily I sold it back for what I paid. But it wasn't a good forge. What I quickly learned before learning about forges was it was so old, but it was a big one. Like, it was a big forge. It came with a big white oak stump, and you know how it had the shape cut in the stump for the vibration and whatnot. But the edges were rounded, so you didn't have those nice sharp clean edges. And it was round, so it was. It probably could have been resurfaced, but it was beyond me.
Anyway, yeah,
everybody loves an anvil.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's sitting in my dad's shop, and I think neither of us use it now. But it's cool that
they're up to like they're a buck or two a pound now.
Really?
Oh yeah, because they became the most very sought after. So if you had like a, you know, a couple hundred pound anvil, it's worth a lot of money.
Yeah, that's what, $50 or $70 for 200 pounds. Divide that out.
No. No.
65?
Homeschool, right?
Yeah. That was homeschooled. What does that have to do with anything?
Well, if it's 200 pounds and it's a buck or two, it could be like
$50. Well, that's what I said.
It'd be
55.
It'd be $400. A buck or two a pound for 200 pounds.
400 pounds for that? Oh, I forgot you're in Canada. I'm sorry. You're in Canada.
$400.
Okay. $400.
For a 200 pounder, which is a cheap, small one. That's all I'm saying.
Yep. Well, what I'm saying is 1 times 200 is 50. 55. Wrong. 65. Rob Acock says, howdy. I wanted to follow up on the draw knife I mentioned last week. Notice I'm not doing the accent. He really did it. He did me in. After doing some research, I found that these tools date back to the 1940s and were used to create barrel staves, furniture legs, etc. Okay, this is that draw knife that we were looking at. Okay, I'm remembering now.
Yep.
They are now considered antique vintage, just like Doug and I. There you go.
I'll take that.
There you have it, and now we know. He says also, I am highly offended by your attempt at a Southern accent, Alec. Do you think that Rob is Southern?
He's joking. I know he's joking.
He better be. He says, that's so hurtful. ... Just kidding. It was hilarious.
There you go.
So there's the question. Have ever of you either considered carving a chess set?
Oh, my goodness. All right. Let me tell you this one. I get that every other day.
Yeah,
you should carve a chess set. And I keep saying, and I say, I don't want a chess set.
You say, you should dig a hole and fall in it.
No, I know it would look cool, but I don't have the commitment to a chess set. I'm happy to carve one thing, paint it, and be done with it, let alone all the chess pieces for a game that I never play.
Yeah.
But it's often recommended. You should carve chess sets. I'm like, I don't want to. I just don't want to.
No. Yeah. My brother's friend reached out. Yeah, I hadn't heard from him in probably 15 years. He used to hang out with my brother. My brother's 10 years older than me. And so he said, hey, Alec, would you carve me a chess set on Facebook Messenger? And I didn't respond to him. And I told my brother. So my brother's like, oh, God, I'm going to have to take care of this. So he calls me back a couple days later and he says, oh man, I talked to my friend. I told him, I'm sorry, dude, like Alex carvings, you know, it's kind of expensive. And this board would be like thousands of dollars. And he was like, oh wow. Okay. Wow. Yeah. I was thinking maybe a couple $100.
Yeah. No.
I mean, could you imagine what you'd have to charge to do, you know, that what he wanted was like detailed figurines of a theme that he created. And it's like,
oh yeah,
people
do it.
Yeah.
But I personally have no desire. No desire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, and it would be pretty trick if you did it. But and maybe one day. But no, I'm kind of with you. I don't know. Maybe if one of my kids was like really into chess for like their birthday. Well, you don't want to be the guy that gives your kids homemade gifts, right? I don't think kids usually like that.
They'll appreciate it when they're older, but not at the time.
Yeah. Well, I guess if you make it really trick and they're like on the chess club, in the chess club, I almost said chess team. I don't know if that's a thing, but
probably. I'm trying to figure out what trick means. Really trick.
The trick. Cool. Yeah. Really. Cool, man. It's a Detroit way of saying cool. Oh, that's right. Okay. Canadians. What do Canadians say? Oh, that's swell. Swell, eh? Anyway, this last comment made Rob, it put him at right at the same level as Mark, actually competing for Mark's position of my favorite, maybe our favorite listener, commenter. He says here, thanks as always, Rob A. P.S. I still have more basswood than you.
Ah, there it is.
Yeah. Thanks, Rob. I appreciate that. That's a reference, by the way, to our last episode. So if you don't get it, you should listen harder. I don't know. That was rude. Damien says, quick story. This I like. While I was watching your interview with Vic Hood, his name being brought up on today's episode reminded me of this. My wife says, did they say Vic Hood? I think I know him. And I was like, nah, no way you can be that cool. Sure enough, she does. Grew up playing with his daughters in Leaper's Fork. We got married in a little Church of Christ, and her grandmother lived right across the street from her. She is still friends with them from him. She is still friends with them on social media.
Small there you world. Go. Small world.
Yep. Thanks, Damien. That's a great story. Well, who is your featured? Wait, let's do this the right way.
Yeah, you're right.
My 36th time. I'm not quite getting the hang of it yet. Media hour. Media. 3, 2, 1. Media.
Yep, it's media.
Thanks.
No. By the way, folks, if you want to hear accents next week, please chime in and let Alec know that you appreciate his nonsensical accents.
Yeah, guys, if I'm being honest, I'm a little gun shy right now. I don't want to offend any cultures or people groups at all.
Otherwise, we got to listen to monotone Alec for the rest of the.
Yeah. Anyway, so
we're gonna do at least 2 more episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, dude, only rich people talk like rich people do talk like that, though. They go, yeah, well, so anyway, what's the deal? What's the bottom line? What are you going to do about it? That's kind of how rich people talk, I think, in my head, at least.
Anyway,
your diarist.
Yeah. Well, mine, again, was your not reading artist? Nothing. Not okay. Not doing much, but I did find a fella on YouTube. The video popped up and it was carving two little men out of a branch, in a branch.
Yeah.
It was really cool. And then I went to his site and it seems to me that I found the Ontario link for woodcarvers. It's a bunch of Zoom calls, much like the International Association of Woodcarvers, but an Ontario version. And the guy's name is Murray Lincoln. And he is a woodcarver, and he has videos just on woodcarving, but he has a lot of those Zoom calls where they have topics and discuss it. And it's been going on for a long time, so it's pretty cool. And I'm excited to find it, and, well, I'm more excited to see more of it because I only had a real quick overview of the channel and the Zoom calls. But, yeah, it looks like fun. Another that's little cool. outlet for woodcarvers.
Yeah, so that's really neat.
Yeah, for those we talked about the other day about Ontario and Canada woodcarvers. Well, here's a little club that was meeting on Zoom.
How cool is that? That's really fun. Yeah, it's crazy. The internet is so big. Like, there's just there's probably a guy in my township who does better wood carvings, and I've never heard of him or met him, and he's probably way cooler in every way, and I just will never know about him because he's not into social media. He doesn't. You know what I mean? And that's kind of, but the internet does open the world up. Like, one day that guy will find out about Facebook when he gets out of his shop, and he'll eventually find out about Instagram or whatever and post his stuff, and then I'll be out of the job. So hope he doesn't find out.
It's an embarrassing thing when you become popular for wood carving and you're not and you're not that good.
Oh, you know, man, that
when you have there's like a real true artist who just
imposter syndrome.
He's just the best at his craft, and nobody knows about him. And some yin yang like me goes on and makes videos. With easy, simple.
That's ridiculous. No, that's preposterous.
No, you know what I'm saying? I'm just saying it's sad that the world can't see these guys first. But they're I don't touch the computer or something. It's like a
I don't like this. I'm gonna end this portion of the show.
It's kind of like the whole idea of the
flip phone
too. Is like, I don't like technology, but you're losing something.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You're losing, like, and all the old guys that are starting to do carving classes online. Good for them,
right?
Because a lot of guys never embraced technology or the Zoom or whatever, and they lost. They lost out. You know, it's the internet is bad and it's good.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. Yeah, you got to show up to play, right? If you're going to play, then you got to show up. So, anyway.
What's your media for the week, mister? Yeah.
Well, I think it's preposterous, the idea, I have to say this first, that you would be one of the guys who doesn't. Dude, I can think of like 15 guys right now whose names I cannot mention on this podcast who are actual posers. And you're like this 16th person, dude. Way below the lower end. I'm just kidding.
I was like, where are you going with this, Alex?
No. You're the furthest thing, dude. I get people coming up to me all the time going like, man, have you seen Doug's Bart carvings? I'm like, watch out. And I'm always like, leave me alone. Scram.
He's not a threat. He's not a threat.
Scram.
I don't want to talk to you. You learned everything from me.
Anyway. No, those words have never come out of my mouth. Although I think it. No, I
just, yes. There you go.
So Simon Dawes is where I'm at lately, as far as media goes. I've been heavy on the music. I've been heavy on. My brother's been like into speakers. My dad built speakers as a hobby as a kid, and so I've been kind of like. So never really gotten bitten by that bug. I've always liked good speakers and like good earbuds and stuff. I really like high quality headbands for the earpieces and headphones and stuff that don't wear out at all. But I got into portable speakers and I got a little, there's a brand called Sonos. It's really overpriced. Anyway, I got one of their speakers and it's like $200. Ugh. But it's in the shop now, and I've been listening to more music. Actually, I've been thinking about listening to music. I've been so busy in the house, I haven't been in the shop. But now that I'm back in the shop, I've gotten back into my old playlist from like 2016, 2017.
I like that.
Isn't that fun?
Yeah. Well, I have a couple of those little memory sticks from back in the day.
Yeah,
when YouTube came out, you could strip the audio.
Yeah, YouTube. Yeah, yeah. You could download it.
And,
yeah,
and I have hundreds of these songs that like, oh, I haven't heard that song for a decade or more. But let me ask you, with your great, good, clear, beautiful sound, can you control your sound? Like, can you appreciate a level of music, or do you keep turning it up?
Control your sound. Sorry, what do you mean by that?
Are you able to just leave your music alone, or are you always kind of every once in a while, if you get into the music a little bit, you keep turning it up a little bit more?
Oh, totally. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. Yeah. It gets louder and louder until all of a sudden I think about the neighbors and I have to turn it down. Yeah.
And you think about the hearing damage.
My phone does that. It says, hey, you've been listening for too long. It's too loud.
Does it really?
Yeah, yeah, it'll yell at you if you have it turned on. Oh, wow. You can turn that on your phone right now, your iPhone.
I drove my wife crazy last week. I got on this kick from my teenage years and whatnot, and I brought up Judas Priest. It was Defenders of the Faith and British Steel. And so I had both of them playing through.
Okay.
And I kept getting louder and louder, and finally comes and says, what are you doing? Like, the whole house is listening to this music, not by choice. Just by me constantly turning up a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more.
I've never really listened to I don't know enough about them. That's a genre that I've only, like Metallica a little bit, you know, some of that stuff, like dip my toes into, but.
Yeah, I never listened to Metallica outside of their first two. After that, I didn't listen too much, but.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the.
That Black album or something, is that what it's called?
No, that was too commercial even for me.
Oh.
I like the old garage days, revisiting stuff like that. The old, the early stuff. Very heavy.
Yeah, so that's what I started doing is I backtracked. I really liked in 2016. First of all, Memory Lane. You're like, I'm like almost emotional thinking about, you know, when I'm listening.
Your old girlfriends. And
even that. You just think about all the the people that you liked, and then like all those memories, and they're all like shrouded in light now in hindsight, right? That was like, you were just full of angst at the time. Like, this girl doesn't like me, or this girl likes me and I don't like her back, or whatever. And now it's just all this fun memory that you return to as a little, you know, like a, whatever you were in 2016, whatever I was in 2016, a 20-year-old or something or whatever. But, so there's that element, but then also I listened to some guys I used to listen to, and then I started thinking back to the this whole kind of Laurel Canyon vibe that I was into for a while. You know, like the these guys like the Neil Youngs and all that. But in the same vein was the Dawes, this band Dawes, and one of my favorite artists who came out of that band is named Blake Mills. That's Blake Mills, M-I-L-L-S, for those of you who have asked about spelling of things. And he, if you search him online, Blake Mills musician or whatever, it'll come up. And he is an awesome, awesome guitar player, a powerful guitar player. He is known by a lot of producers to be one of the better ones, because a lot of guys that get really technically good, it can play like crazy riffs, you know, like Eric Clapton level, like, but I don't, you know, do it all the time. Because if you can shred is the motto. But Blake can do that. Grew up, he could do that stuff as a little kid, really cut back. And when he plays now, it's so sparse and it's so meaningful. And he's traveled a lot and pulled a lot from like Cuban guitar players and like this beautiful melodic kind of, you know, a kind of arpeggiated thing, just like incredible guitar playing. It's I won't nerd out too much, but worth checking out. But he was in this band with the band currently known as Dawes. That's Simon. Gosh, now his name is escaping me now, but it'll come to me later. But anyway, early on in Dawes, Taylor Goldsmith and his brother started this band with Blake, and they've kind of gone on and become this really big thing. And at one time they were in, Blake and Taylor were in a little band called Simon Dawes. And kind of like you were talking about with your early Metallica days, they're just in a garage and they're writing these songs, and it's poor. It's like just kind of mixed by, you could tell by like a teenager, but it's so raw and full of energy. And you can hear like all the things that those artists are doing now as big time producers, you know, winning Grammys and stuff early on in their garage. And it's fun to just both relive your own childhood memories and also to kind of experience other people's childhood memories.
Well, you talk about Blake Mills. I was a big fan of his brother, Frank. It's not his brother, but you know Frank Mills.
No.
That's childhood revisited, mother. Yeah. I had to play the piano. Frank Mills had a song called Peter Piper, and it was, I had to learn how to play it, and I'd play it over and over and over again.
Peter Piper.
Peter Piper by Frank Mills.
Yeah.
He's an accomplished pianist, very popular.
That's funny.
Yep. You know what I used to do for fun? This is maybe off color for some, but I used to laugh so hard every time I would do it. We had a our worship the lead worship guy, he was a pianist, and every time I had to email him, I would always write to my favorite pianist. Well, I'd spell it P-E-N-I-S-T. and I would laugh so hard. He'd never say anything, but
this is probably love that. He probably thought fun. You're probably his hero for being the one guy to actually point it out.
So. To be a human. All right. We made it through episode number 36.
Thanks, everybody. Take your vitamins.
Y'all come back now, I hear.
There you go. Doug will do the accents from now on. How about that?
That's the Beverly Hillbillies.
Much love.